Well, welcome, and again, thank you, Ryan. And I also want to thank Milena Kalinowska, who, and also the curators, Kelly Gordon and Carrie Brower. I think they deserve a tremendous thank you because they've been really focusing on new media here at the Hirshhorn for a number of years now and bringing this very important dialogue about electronic media and the artists that are working in this area to Washington, D.C. We need a lot more new media here in the nation's capital, and I'm really glad that the Hirshhorn is taking the lead on that. So there's so many things to talk about, and I'm going to probably speak for about 15 or 20 minutes. Part of that will be going inside through the magic door there into the Gary Hill installation, where I'm going to talk about that for a few minutes, and then we'll open it up for questions. So I think that I've been down here a number of times going through the show, and the thing that really struck me is that the cinema show is really about how film is viewed in the 21st century and leading up to the 21st century, the way in which film is viewed and the way in which film is made, and also the way narrative is constructed. I mean, this show really reveals the transformations and paradigm shifts brought on through experimental film and experimental video that's really changed the parameters of how we experience film nowadays. And I think what's particularly interesting, and I think that runs through the whole exhibition, is this notion of ambiguity. Each of the works explores its subtext, its content, in terms of ambiguous modes of perception, ambiguous modes of narrative that lend this dreamlike quality to all of the works in the show. And this idea of what is real and what is not, what is fiction and what is nonfiction, is another theme that runs through the whole exhibition, and I think speaks to the media world that we live in today, where our lives are, the narrative really of the world that we live in is constructed through the media. And we perceive our reality through the media. And this show plays into that idea in a really, really just powerful way. So I think at this point, why don't we head inside?
I'm not sure if I've seen the exhibit yet.
I'll just assume that. How many of you have actually seen the show so far? So, well, maybe half. We'll talk about the Gary Hill, and then I will refer to a few other works in the show. So if you haven't seen it yet, don't worry about it, but it'll give you some ways of thinking about the rest of the exhibition. So why don't, if everybody could just step inside. Okay, I'm just curious where the speaker, we're completely wireless here today. So, one of the things that, can everybody hear me okay? I know it's very resonant in the space. I probably sound like the voice of God coming through the sound system here. But I wanted to begin by talking a little bit about Gary Hill. Gary Hill was born in 1951. He lives in Seattle, and he's one of the premier video artists in the field. And like Bill Viola, who's another major video artist, he's of the same generation. He came of age during the early 70s, was part of a number of artists who were working with experimental television during the early 70s. And I think, like Bill Viola, has a very special relationship, not just with the image, but with sound as well. And one of the things that I wanted to point out about this piece is how much it actually draws from music. I'm going to begin by talking a little bit about how this piece is done technically, which is kind of mysterious, and it was a little difficult to to get a lot of information about. Even the curators here know a certain amount about the technology, but not completely. But from what I gather, behind one of these walls is the equipment, the computer, and four DVD players that have all the imagery that you see. There are four DVD players that are connected to one another and synchronized, and they're being fed through a computer and a video routing system that then sends out the signals to the 30 monitors in the exhibition. And one of the things, and the piece is called Suspension of Disbelief for Marine. And I think that what's interesting about the way that the piece is constructed from a technical standpoint is just how much it lends itself to a musical interpretation. As I mentioned, you know, the way that video or film is made has changed dramatically, and this is a great example of that, because one of the things that you'll notice about this piece is that you don't watch it in the way that you would watch an ordinary video on a single screen, that you actually are constantly chasing the image around. And you'll notice that there are various patterns and movement of the imagery. And because there are four DVD players, you'll notice that there are never more than four images at any one time, even though it might appear that there are more than four because the images are being routed around the monitor so quickly. But it's a very elusive and transient work that begins to take shape as you watch it. One of the things that Gary Hill was particularly interested in, and I suppose it's important to know that much of Gary Hill's work is rooted in the word, in text, and the way that the word relates to the image. And this piece is very different from most of his other work in the sense that this doesn't involve any text and there's no sound in the work. It's purely about the human body and the transience of two human bodies that have been joined electronically. So what he was interested in doing with this piece, and the reason why it's called Suspension of Disbelief for Marine, is that Gary Hill was living in Seattle, and his girlfriend, I think it's his girlfriend, moved to New York. So they were separated. They were separated at a great distance across the country, and he wanted to create a piece that would unite them, that would reunite them at least virtually in the electronic space. So what he did is he filmed his own body in Seattle, and then he went to New York and he videotaped his wife's body, and then he composed this piece so that the two of them have been reunited. And so the idea of suspension of disbelief is that it's a kind of suspension bridge, as it were, of video monitors, but also it invokes this idea of the suspension of disbelief. And I'm not sure if this is a term that everybody is aware of, but the suspension of disbelief is the term that's used quite often in film and in theater that deals with the notion of illusion, the way in which we watch a film or we watch a theater work on stage, and there's an imaginary fourth wall that exists between the audience and the stage, which creates this sense of illusion and a sense of what you see is real and what you sense is really happening. And that suspension of disbelief is what engages you in the piece, is what creates the emotional or cathartic connection with the work. So what he set about to do here was to explore how media can create a sense of intimacy despite technological separation. There's a term for this that's been kind of bantered around in the media world called the telematic embrace. And this term, the telematic embrace, was actually the theme of a media exhibition that traveled around the country a few years ago. I had a piece in this show. And the artists in this exhibition, The Telematic Embrace, were all concerned with how we could reconnect or unite with one another through media, such as, you know, when we speak over the telephone, when we're accessing one another through IM or through the internet, email and the web, and how does technological separation impact proximity, the sense of proximity and the sense of intimacy between people. So what he's interested in evoking in this piece is a sense of intimacy between himself and his girlfriend, despite the technological separation, uniting them in this electronic space, and showing also the transient nature of that elusive, illusionary relationship between them by this constantly shifting video image that again, we're chasing. But as you watch it more and more, you begin to construct this connection between their two bodies, their two naked bodies that are lying and that are joined and swapping back and forth, as it were, between the two of them. And maybe we could just take a moment. I'll stop for just a moment and just watch this piece. So the artist is inviting us to create an intimacy, to create a relationship that exists entirely in the electronic realm. And this is a notion that we're constantly critiquing and constantly questioning as we think about our relationship to one another as it's mediated through technology. Now, there are a few other ideas that I just wanted to explore briefly in terms of how this piece connects to other works in the exhibition. Brings up a few other ways in which this piece is constructed. One of the things that I think is really interesting about this, and it's a term that Bill Viola has called data space, is the idea that the piece isn't just running from a linear unfolding of images in time, but is running from a bank of images, a repository or database of images that are being redistributed in the installation space. And there's a piece right over here called Release that takes some footage from King Kong and then manipulates that footage much in the way that a DJ would scrub a video to explore the idea that video or film does not have to be experienced in linear real time, but rather can be manipulated and accessed using computer technology. Next, on the other side over here, we have Steve McQueen's Bear. And there's a connection between this piece and that piece as well, because in Bear you have the artist who's African American, and he is performing a kind of dance and ambiguous sexual kind of embrace. And again, the ambiguity and the connection, the embrace between the two of them is constructed in the electronic realm, just as this piece is. So that's another interesting connection. And of course, the idea that video can be created as sculpture is something that ties in with the Tony Alcer works. As you'll see, they're projected faces and body parts on doll-like sculptures to create this very bizarre, these bizarre psychological conditions as video sculpture. So that's another important aspect of the Gary Hill piece, is the way in which it creates a sense of sculpture. And then I think another interesting connection is the very first piece when you walk in. It's a piece by Douglas Gordon. And you see a curtain. And you see a light behind the curtain. And when anyone passes through that curtain, you see their shadow, their silhouette. What that piece does is it also invokes this notion of the suspension of disbelief and questions authenticity and illusion of what's happening behind the screen. And I think, and it also brings up the whole notion of immersion and the penetration into the artwork. And I think that this piece also invites you, besides the suspension of disbelief, it also invites you to immerse yourself and penetrate and cross that suspension bridge, as it were, into this electronic space that Gary Hill has created. So I think that's about everything that I wanted to mention, but I wanted to take some time and for questions from the group. So does anyone have any questions? Yes?
You mentioned more about music, and
could you say it in the mic?
You mentioned that there's a musical, you compared some music, can you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, my background is in music, And I've always approached my work with media as a composer. In fact, I refer to this technique as composing with media. And so it's the idea that you would work with musical structures, musical dynamics, rhythm, pattern, the way that the image might be constructed according to those typically musical parameters, but it's not music that you hear. It's, in a sense, it's music that you see.
Anyone else?
I had a question about the curatorial choice in the exhibit to have the DVD sort of looping, never announce when they begin or end, and it sort of is a fluid experience as you move through. Is that, I guess, A, consistent with the intentions of the artists, and does the patron miss anything by starting in the middle of, after all, a green light DVD?
That's a really good question, and it would be the intent of the artist to do that. But it's also interesting in the way that museums interface with media art, because museums historically were made for objects, and also typically the lights are turned on, they're not turned off, and the walls are not black, and you're not walking through these darkened corridors. So there's a whole paradigm shift that's involved in the way that that museums are showing media art. The other thing is that historically, film and video was not meant to be shown in a museum. It was meant to be screened. And so the idea of showing particularly long works is very problematic in museums, because who has the time? I mean, if you were actually to see every single work in this show in its entirety, I don't know, maybe it would...
They say about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Well,
but
Andy Warhol's Sleep alone is an hour.
If you discount Sleep, it's about an hour and a half back to back.
Yeah. It's a fairly big investment in time. So there's that aspect of it in terms of how the works, you know, utilize time and the amount of time it takes to view the work. But the other thing that's very interesting is that, as opposed to the way that film is screened, where you walk into a theater and you are intended to watch the piece from its beginning to its end, it doesn't work like that in a museum. Because you're walking. I mean, you don't look at art that way. You don't look at art like it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. You enter into the work, you watch it for as long as you want, and then you move on. And that's the paradigm that still functions in the museum, even when you're showing media. So I think that a number of artists took that into consideration when they created their works and really thought deeply about how the moving image needs to be experienced in a museum environment as opposed to a screened environment. And that's why so many of the pieces are short and they run on loops and they don't really have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You're meant to enter into the piece at any given point in time. That's a really interesting observation, the idea that we're looking at a kind of film strip. But I think that the similarity with film really breaks down at that point, because this is a nonlinear work. This piece doesn't have a beginning, a middle, or an end. The images don't play at necessarily 24 or 30 frames per second. And what we have essentially is this almost kind of digital way of thinking about film, that the images are either on or they're off. There's a kind of zero or one notion that's playing out on those screens. And that's a very different way of viewing film and watching video. So I think that this work, perhaps more than any other piece in the exhibition, which is why I was interested in this piece, really breaks the pattern of how we view film at a certain rate or speed, and in terms of its linearity.
It has a sense of what like Stan Brakhage, though. I was just thinking about Stan Brakhage. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if everyone is familiar with Stan Brakhage, who's known for hand painting, frame by frame, his film works. And they also don't play out in a linear fashion, that they are essentially a series of paintings at 24 frames per second that just flash before your eyes and create almost a kind of subliminal explosion of light in your brain, in much the way that this does. And I think that I really think that you know, in the work of Stan Brakhage and the work of Gary Hill, that they're trying to create this kind of dreamlike interpretation of the image by showing the work as light and as flashes of light and as transient moving things that are happening so quickly that they can't be perceived in the normal fashion, but they're perceived in some kind of subliminal way. That the images sort of plant themselves into your mind and then come back or reoccur in a way that is not in any kind of traditional linear fashion.
Anyone else?
Just a technical question. Do these images all occur in a set order, or is there any sort of randomness involved in the appearance of images on the screen?
You know, that was the question that I was hoping to get to in my research, and I didn't get there. And I don't think anybody around here would be able to answer that question. How this piece was sequenced, whether it was subjected to some kind of algorithm or mathematical pattern, or whether it was really composed frame by frame, monitor by monitor. I think that's a really interesting question, and it brings us back to the way that musicians work, you know, in terms of the construction of rhythm, the construction of pattern and duration. I'd be very interested in knowing that myself. It's a good question, but it's not the kind of, I think it's, you know, it's fair to say, it's not the kind of problem I think that typically is looked at in the visual arts, because it has so much to do with a musical perception of pattern in time. But I really think that, you know, knowing that Gary Hill's work is a lot of his work has explored sound, that I would imagine that he's thinking very much along the lines of musical composition here. I know that Bill Viola actually studied music as a student, and I wouldn't be surprised if Gary Hill had as well. Okay.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us, Randall, and thank you all for coming. I hope that it happens in the exhibit that you work your way back that way and start again through this way, but whatever way you decide, I'm sure will be fine. So, next Friday at 12:30 in the Ring Auditorium downstairs, Amy Summer, the New York artist, will be part of our Gershon show. We'll be talking about her work, both past and present. Thank you again for coming, and thank you very much for talking about this work. It was great.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you. Enjoy the show.